Oh, yes. Rich certainly can, Laird. Ted Johnson. You can call us at 617-779-7937. Go to the Odyssey app, and you can listen to us, follow the show as well. Let's go to, real quick, let's go to Mike on line four. I find this interesting. Mike, what's happening, my man? How you doing?
Gentlemen, what's going on today?
So listen,
Teddy, I've been hearing the story you just told about Pearl Jam from my wife for like 25 years. We've been married for 25 years. I never bothered to like fact check the story because she told me the story chapter and verse over and over. She told me about, you know, basically Rodman putting Eddie Vedder on his shoulders. I'm like, what the hell was Rodman in May? She said she saw you at the show. And the one inconsistency here, Teddy, and you tell me, I don't know if you're wrong or she's wrong or my storytelling's wrong. She said, this is like before Pearl Jam was really, really big, right? And she said that it was at the Augusta Civic Center. It was general admission to this concert.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
And they let everybody in at once, and she was just crazy. And she was a huge Pearl Jam fan, so she made it to the front, and she said it was the best concert she ever went to, but she did say it was at the Augusta Civic Center. So was it Bangor or was it Augusta, Teddy?
Oh, okay. Well, let's ask Teddy tomorrow.
He says Bangor.
He says Bangor, but he admitted that the guy who took him there, we were just talking off the air before Teddy had to leave today, but he said the guy that took him there didn't tell him, he had no idea how far it was. He said it's a couple hours, and it was ended up being a 4 or 5 hour drive. So maybe he thought it was Bangor. He has no idea where it went.
Really?
Can you imagine what it looked like to see Ted standing next to Eddie Vedder? That would be he could have picked up Eddie Vedder and eaten him. Like, you know what that was like? I read this story, so I have not. I know, Ken, you and Stiz have seen The Odyssey. I have not seen it yet.
Come on, Rich.
I know what's going on. You were so fired up for this movie. It's unbelievable.
He does get a pass. He's got
okay. Life gets weird. but definitely I'm going to see it. I promise. But there's a scene in the movie. Correct me if I'm describing this wrong, where there are some giant knights that come out of the woods and they have to fight Odysseus. Okay. Right. Now, I didn't read too much about it. All I know is that Christopher Nolan is so into doing things without CGI. Apparently how he filmed that was that he got like the tallest people that he could find, like the mountain and like NBA players, you know, guys who could play in the NBA to play these giants. And he cast like tiny women to play Odysseus and all of his crew. Like, as a matter of fact, Matt Damon's character is played by a woman, but it's from the back, and like I guess your arms are jacked, like like he is. And they made it look like it was these giants, you know, fighting Odysseus and all that. So that must have been what Ted and Eddie Vedder looked like.
It was forced perspective. I believe Hitchcock pioneered that type of shot.
What about a hard drop there? Forced perspective from Stiz.
Very, very nice.
I gotta be honest. It's supposed to be a bunch of man-eating giants. Why are they wearing the armor?
Do not listen to this guy.
I didn't get this scene. This was a whiff.
Stop it. No. No.
I mean, sorry.
It's a great scene, Rich. You are going to love it.
I can't wait. Now, is it going to be as good as the news that was broken today? And that is that Tom Cruise might be coming back and doing a sequel for one of the greatest films he's ever made. Any guesses?
Color Money.
No, that's a sequel to The Hustler.
Oh, it is. You're right.
That's already a sequel.
Concrete Thunder?
Nope.
No.
Boy.
How about Days of Thunder?
Oh, Days of Thunder? Wow.
Oh.
Sneaky good movie.
Robin's racing, baby. There's a part in that movie that just gives me the ultimate chills. It makes my hair stand up. And it's so dumb. Like, on paper, I bet when they all read the script, like, this is the dumbest thing it's ever written in the script. But it works. It's when Robert Duvall goes into the old warehouse and he takes the sheet off the car that he's going to turn into Cole Trickle's car. And he goes, I'm going to make you fast. I'm going to put a 4-hemi engine and blah, blah, blah. You're going to be smooth. And he's just like, he's talking to the car. I'm like,
Classic.
Ooh, you got me. You got
Randy Quaid there. You got what a cast.
Well, Randy Quaid was miscast in that movie, I will say. I think Uncle Eddie had happened right before that.
He was trying to correct his image.
Yeah, you can't do that. Let's go to DJ on line three. DJ, what's happening, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, DJ.
Hey, man, how are you? Not to kick Bradshaw while he's not on the show, but I heard him talking about the idea of the Red Sox training for Bobby Witt, and I just can't understand why a mid-market team like Kansas City would want to trade their generational talented 25-year-old shortstop who's already inked to an 11-year contract when they don't have any other contracts on the book besides Mikel Garcia? Like, why, if you're Kansas City, why would you do that at the deadline? That's a move, if you're going to do, you do in the offseason.
That's a Bradfoe question, man.
Fair point.
I mean, I know he threw that out there, but I don't know why they would do that either. Well, I know that they just put him on the 10-day IL.
Well, that made me wonder if they were keeping him on the IL for a reason. Because it's the first time Bobby Witt's ever gone to the IL. So you just think, are they trying to make sure he's healthy? But Bradfoe's not the only person to throw that out there. Now, it would be a shock. I mean, there's no doubt about that. They'd be giving up their young star, but... Why you do it is because you get a haul back in return, right? You get Roman Anthony and several other prospects, blah, blah, blah.
But the thing is about him is, if I'm not mistaken, I'm looking up right now, he's got a full no-trade clause.
Yeah.
So any deal needs his blessing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, who knows if he would give it up for the Red Sox. I do know that the Yankees apparently are rumored tied to him, wanting to get it, the Diamondbacks, the White Sox. So there's smoke. There's absolute smoke.
Yep.
But it would have to be on him to make the decision because of that no-trade clause. Let's go to Paul on line one. Paul, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, my guys. How you doing?
Good, man. What's up, Paul?
Listen, I appreciate your show all the time. You know that. But I have to say, we're talking about the Patriots. I think the Hey Papa is done. I think Jonathan is running the show. I think Gonzalez is going to get his money, and Drake May. Because you don't come 4-13 and not have a great selection like that. I mean, for years we never got up there in great selections in a draft choice. But I got to tell you, I think Jonathan is running the show with Mike Vrabel and Mr. Wolf. I trust him. Well, listen,
Paul, the reason you're calling about that is because we were talking about whether or not Vrabel's got any kind of push or any kind of influence on whether or not Gonzalez ends up getting his big contract.
Right.
And I guess what we were told was that is more of a Elliott Wolf thing, where he is told by Jonathan Kraft, here's a budget we have, you can figure it out. Ultimately, it's a Jonathan Kraft decision. When you are going to set the market, essentially, it sounds like they're going to set the market on that position. There's no way a decision like that doesn't go through the check of ownership. I don't think it's like, here's the amount of money we're going to give you to spend, and you spend it on the guys the way you want to. Something like that, there's no way that Jonathan doesn't.
Of course, and listen to Ted tell the story about him going to Florida to be wooed by the Crafts when he signed his contract. Like, I imagine they're still that way, right? If you're going to sign a guy to that kind of a deal, you want to make sure you're so comfortable with the player, he's like family to you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They will be intimately involved in that.
It's going to be interesting because I know they are right now just waiting around. Like they're essentially waiting for what's-his-name to get his deals on.
Yeah,
yeah, that was the report that came out yesterday, and who knows?
But I feel better about it. Don't you feel like there's a little more smoke in the positive direction that the Pats are going to get it done? They're just waiting. Now it's not like it won't get done. It's just it'll be a matter of time.
I don't know why they can't do it first. Is there any kind of justification why? I know the second person will obviously get more money. It sounds like that's kind of the plan, even though it's the same agent.
Right.
Because you want to be the one who's the, obviously you want to make more than the last guy. You want to be the one that sets the market, but I just don't know why you can't do it first.
Yeah. I bet you the Pats probably want to, but maybe it's the other way around. Like, Gonzalez is saying, hey, I'll sign when I figure out what the market is,
Yeah, maybe you're right. All right, 617-779-7937. You give us a call, we'll take your questions, and we will talk some Patriots here in just a few with Tommy Curran. Oh, it is 93.7 WEEI, Rich, Ken, Ted, and Ted was talking about beating Billy Corgan to the Smashing Pumpkins. This is the only Smashing Pumpkins song I don't like.
Way to go, Stiz. You ruined the vibe.
No, Rich
jinxed the Red Sox. What the hell's going on?
This is like their biggest song, or one of them, so I can't fault Stiz for playing it. It's just for some reason, and this album is a perfect album, except for this song. I've just never been a huge fan. It's not a bad song. It's just kind of like one of those kind of things.
You're not a fan of bells and songs?
Oh, no, I like bells. Like, I'm a big fan of Hell's Bells.
There you go.
Nothing better than that. For Whom the Bell Tolls, that's got an actual bell in it, too. I think it's a requirement. If you have a bell in your title, you have to have a bell in the song. Without a question. All right. This is something we mentioned earlier, and it's worth mentioning once again, because honestly, who would have ever expected Tom Brady, greatest player we've ever seen play the game. Probably the coolest person on the planet when he was winning those Super Bowls.
I just want to push back on that slightly. Do you think he was universally thought of as the coolest person on the planet when he was at his peak as a player? There was always a little bit of nerd in him, right?
Here's how you can judge it. How many men, like if I went and asked 100 men, let's say after he won the Super Bowl in Tampa, if you could ask 100 men, name 5 guys whose life you would like to switch places with, I guarantee you a large number of them would have said Tom Brady, correct?
Well, but at the time he was very into Guerrero, and
nobody cared about that.
People did. Yes, they did. The concussion water and all the history with Guerrero, there was a lot of people calling that into question. You know, like, what is this? You're getting weird. He was ripping you for eating Frosted Flakes. That was, by that point, that was already out. Maybe a little before that.
Okay, so let's go to 28-3. Let's go to 28-3.
Okay.
After he wins that Super Bowl, if you were to ask 100 guys, name 5 dudes you'd like to trade places with in life, how many of them would say Tom Brady?
Yeah, okay. You would have got a fair amount of Brady's. You're right.
Yeah.
By
definition, that would make him one of the coolest people on the planet. He's something that most men wanted to be and most women wanted to be with. Like, he was just the guy. I mean, he was like the ultimate man. And now it's weird. And now he's just made some of the strangest choices. We've talked about how he had the dog cloning service, the commercial where he goes and humps that mattress, or allegedly it looks like he's going to. All this stuff with he got tied in with the NFT guys and the crypto dude who got arrested.
Pizza Hut commercials.
Yeah, but at least that's something, like, instead of starting a clothing brand and like partnering with Nike, somebody like the way Jordan did, he just made his own brand, Brady Brand, which like think went out of business pretty quick because he was charging $200 for compression pajamas. Like, who has that money? Like, he's just so weird and out of touch. And now he's got this wrestling thing where he's screwing around with Logan Paul. Dude, you're effing Tom Brady. What is that phrase? It's like the lion do not meddle in the affairs of sheep. You are the ultimate lion, and that dude's like a muskrat. Like, what are you doing? Why are you lowering yourself to this? But I changed my mind after I, you know, thought about it a little bit. And I'm
really?
No,
you're coming around on it.
No, well, I'm coming around on the fact that I think that we've never seen anything like this, and let's all sit back and enjoy the ride and see how the experiment goes.
There's a second level to it, don't you? That whatever the wrestling thing is, at some point they'll make it good somehow, right?
Well, this is, as I said, it's like Meryl Streep working at Hooters. Like, this is like one of the greatest of all time, doing something like, what are you doing?
Well, Hooters is great, classic.
And now I even know that it's more of a work because there's a story that's going around about Logan Paul telling NFL teams or NFL, saying that NFL teams want to try him out because they want him to play for him.
Jake Paul, but yeah.
Is it Jake Paul? Dude, yep. I get the two mixed up.
I know.
Both Pauls.
No, it's very easy.
But like, so Jake Paul is saying that NFL teams are calling him because they want to play for him. First of all, no, they're not. Second of all, that's all part of this setup to fight Tom Brady or have some Tom Brady thing in the ring. It's so dumb. It's all just like to lead to some big SummerSlam thing, and it's so funny watching Tom Brady do this. You know, it's Daniel Day-Lewis becoming a member of the Globetrotters. It's just odd. Yeah. But then now this is funny. Mike Florio came out with an article, and he thinks that he might know why Tom Brady's doing this, why he's trying to be like more of the common man. And this article is pretty fascinating.
Florio is so good at taking it to the next level of what could be. Remember, he was on with us, and he said what this could be with Vrabel and Rossini, and we were like, what?
That was so outrageous that I didn't even want to talk about it afterwards because I was afraid I would misquote him.
Stay on target.
Well, especially after he said that. But I am intrigued by his theories, you know, his conspiracy theories.
This is good, Ken. It is. He put, Tom Brady's slow motion pivot to pro wrestling proves that the GOAT is overexposed, but there's a chance his ever expanding footprint is more about political strategy than deep seated insecurity. Brady's play could be to lay the foundation for a presidential run. Oh boy. It would, of course, he's just, let it play. It would explain the effort to connect with wrestling fans, even if Brady apparently tries to be a heel. Oh, he does such a good job, too, the way he called Logan Paul a dork. It would also... That's like the dumbest thing. You're a dork.
Brady roast.
Oh, you square. It would also fit, he says, it would also fit with something that one of Brady's former business partners believed. The word former applies because Brady and the former partner had a falling out, but because not because they did, but because the former partner is currently in prison. Before the house of cards known as FTX collapsed, founder Sam Bankman-Fried reportedly was trying to get Brady to run for the Republican nomination in 2024 against the current president. It supposedly went far enough to get Bankman-Fried to ask his team to conduct polling on the views of Americans regarding Brady as a presidential candidate. No. Not long ago, the idea of someone with no experience in politics running for the highest U.S. political office would have been dismissed as lunacy. Now, it's a different story, of course. Why spin your wheels in the House or Senate when you can leverage fame and notoriety into an instant political base? Brady looks good, regardless of whether he's had any pharmaceutical or follicular enhancements. That's what he says. He speaks better than he used to. He's rich and getting richer all the time. He craves competition and some would say attention, which could make the political arena the perfect spot for the man in the arena. So stay tuned. Brady is creeping towards 50, and if and when he concludes that he'll never have the kind of cash to become the controlling owner of an NFL team, Brady may decide to try to take control of the entire country.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't see him doing that because he likes to be liked too much.
Yeah, but you could see him starting it, right? I mean, he's dabbled in everything. So that's not a shock that he would at least test the waters. But I think you're right. Like, he would be embarrassed early and pivot out of it quickly.
It's just this guy.
It's amazing. Would that be rock bottom? I mean...
Oh, no. That would be the greatest. Watching him run for office would be so unbelievably awkward because he's going to go up against somebody who really knows how to debate and murder him. It would just absolutely destroy him because he won't know how to act.
No.
He won't know how to, now he'll, although maybe he'll use some of his press conference technique and say nothing and make you think that he said something. And all for the first time, all these political reporters instead of sports reporters will go, "Oh my gosh, he's the best." And go look at his notes and go, "We got nothing."
Well, that's what I mean. Like, even then, he never said anything and it was well aware that he said nothing. He was an expert at saying.
His commercials would just be the best.
Or let alone his podium work, as you say. If we ever get audio of him debating the topics of the day, it would be great.
Hey, this is Tom Brady. Remember that commercial where it was implied that I was going to hump the hotel mattress all night long? Well, that's what I'm going to do for America. I'm going to hump away poverty, hump away the deficit, but most importantly, I'm going to hump that mattress. So this November, vote for me, Tom Brady, for your next president. Let's effing hump a mattress.
He's going to have to beat out Stephen A. Smith for the Republican nomination.
True, what a battle that'll be.
Well, I would just like hold up a picture of an ass, and then all of us at the debate, his head would just... he wouldn't be able to think.
So Texter, 207 Texter, says he's going to show up at SmackDown in Boston. Is that soon? Would he make like a tour with this?
Oh yeah, there is a SmackDown coming, I think, in August. Yep.
Well, that's what it's going to, and it's in Boston. Oh, of course. Then it all makes sense.
I don't know about that, but he's going to show up at the next pay per view event, which is SummerSlam,
right.
And he's going to interfere in Logan Paul's match, and it's going to be corny.
Hello, I'm Tom Brady. You may have seen my face recently and said, "Hey, it's Ellen DeGeneres."
Oh,
that's because it's your president. I'll be ready to work. I mean, I've had a lot of work on my face, which is basically the same thing.
But not his hair.
No, not his hair, of course not. All right. This would be the best. Imagine how great this would be if he actually ran for president.
Now, question for you. Is Bill Belichick hurting his legacy? Is Tom Brady hurting his legacy?
Okay, two different things. Two completely different things. Tom Brady can do whatever he wants. He just looks stupid now. The football part of it, he'll always be the greatest. What Bill is doing is like actually hurting his foot. What he's known for, like his football acumen. Like now, it's like, wow, is he really not that great? And it was all Brady. You know what I mean?
Like there is a breaking point. Like obviously, like OJ affected his legacy with things he did after his playing career. I'm not saying comparing the two, but there's always a breaking point. So there's got to be some point if it gets super weird. Where it does impact the way you feel about their playing career, even if it's all off the field stuff. So I don't politics for Brady. That might actually qualify. You might
Dennis
be like,
Rodman's one of the weirdest people I've ever seen in my life. He made Double Team with Jean-Claude Van Damme, and you couldn't understand what either one was saying.
Oh, great
the entire movie.
But he was cool. Like, Rodman was all... It kind of hit, don't you think? Like, he was so weird, he became popular after he was playing.
I've been saying this for months. I think Brady's cool factor has dropped for me significantly.
Oh, of course.
Significantly.
Oh, of course. But I'm talking back in the day, he was the coolest person on the planet.
Well, that's what, that's what Stiz is saying. He's affected, he's impacted his cool legacy, which is tied into the player.
Right. He's at a 5.5 Fonzie's. He was at a 10 plus Fonzie's. And now he's like, he's not super cool. Like, you know what? He's had to flip down the collar. He's like, he can't hit the jukebox anymore, and it starts playing on its own.
Right.
He's no longer super cool. All right, 617-779-7937. Tommy Curran, he knows everything about the NFL. He knows everything about the Patriots. We'll talk to him next. Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. A time of year that I'm sure, Ted, you remember this well, I'm sure. Summer is over. Time to go to work. What was that first day like when you arrived at campus? Like when you arrived at the camp to get ready for what was going to be a very, very long stretch of months. What's day number one like?
Ted showed up in a Batmobile.
I did not. Nothing. I came in not on a wing and a prayer. Well, pretty much a wing and a prayer, but nothing fancy. I came in just nervous as all get out because the first day of camp, Steve DiAsi knocked on my door. He said, Parcells told me to come over and tell you that the incumbent linebacker named Todd Collins did not show up, and so you're going to be starting from day one, and so don't screw it up. And so I went into the bathroom and just threw up everything I ate for breakfast.
Oh, jeez.
And then went out and practiced, you know, and I just remember nerves, ball of nerves, man. I mean, the Patriots were turning a corner. You know, that 94 season, they had a really – Bledsoe kind of had an outbreak season and a lot of high expectations. And Bill Parcells was not an easy coach to play for. So, and then all of a sudden, the guy that I was competing with didn't show up. So there was a lot of pressure on me day one. So, yeah, I think I threw up before every single practice for the first week.
Damn. Oh, my God. Well, a lot of people are going to be throwing up next week because it is the beginning of camp. And covering the whole thing is going to be our good buddy Tommy Curran from NBC Sports Boston. Tommy Curran, have you ever thrown up on the first day of camp by any chance?
No, and I love that story from Ted.
So
I never caught that after any practices, the vomit on the breath.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually a good question you could ask these guys. Like, you know, did you have any strange reaction on your first day out there? I have a feeling that...
There's rookies. You're going to hear... You go into the bathroom before practice in these first few practices, I bet you hear some guys heaving. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was commonplace, at least it was when I played. I can't imagine being... I mean, the pressure is, there's a lot of pressure, man. This is your big break, and you don't want to screw it up, man.
Absolutely.
And you were making $200 a day back then, too.
That's correct, yeah. All that jingle.
Well, Tommy Curran, we've been talking a lot about one particular story. We got a lot to talk about with you, obviously, with camp starting. But can we just start with the Gabe Backus situation? You know, I think we heard Burt Breer yesterday say that this could be a red shirt situation. First of all, can you kind of explain what that could mean? And second of all, whose fault is it that this guy doesn't seem like he's going to be playing this season?
I wouldn't go that far at all. It could be a red shirt season in that, and I would imagine Burt meant that there's a lot for him to overcome in terms of the learning curve. But that being said, if he signs tomorrow, and even with that learning curve, he's going to play. They need edge help. It's not like they can just have him sign and say, we have plenty of players, we don't need you out there. It's going to certainly be a learning curve. He's put himself behind the eight ball with this contract strife. My best understanding of what has occurred right now is it's contractual. It's not physical. And we've seen him posting on social media. This is a second-round pick from Illinois, edge player who they had high hopes of having be a contributor in a huge position of need this year. He had a knee procedure done. Now, when the knee procedure was done was – after he came to rookie minicamp, He said, well, I think I have a knee thing here, or I have a knee thing. And the Patriots hadn't found that, nor had anybody else, prior to the draft and prior to the rechecks done right around the draft. So the player that they drafted, in essence, was not the one they signed up for because he had a knee issue. It didn't occur under the Patriots' watch. We went and had the procedure done, and I think now the issue isn't whether or not he's healthy. It's the simple fact of, okay, well, we drafted you thinking you were in one condition, and you were indeed in another condition. Where do you fit then in terms of the slot? Because it shouldn't be complicated.
I'm sorry, Tom. I'm a little confused here. Are you saying that did he injure himself after he was drafted, or was it an injury that they just didn't find when they before they drafted him?
I don't think it was disclosed. But I don't blame you for being confused. I'm glad you asked. Every team does a recheck. All the players are rechecked prior to the draft, and the Patriots went and drafted him. And after drafting him, he came to the OTAs minicamp, said he had a knee issue, and then that was addressed via surgery. If that injury occurred after the recheck, which seems to be the case, the onus would, I think, be on Akis and his agent to let all the teams know, we got an issue. It's not the same player that you saw. It's not the same player that was done a recheck on. So that's my best understanding of where things stand. Hmm. So basically they drafted a player that may not have fully disclosed his condition prior. Again, the team hasn't done a very good job of illuminating us on what the situation is, nor has the agent come out and said anything. So this is my best understanding of where things are, and that's what the hang-up is. The hang-up is not that he is injured beyond repair and may not play, but the Patriots still, because he hasn't been in, have still not had a chance to look and say, okay, well, he's going to be fine. So your hang-up is that. I hope I was clear enough in my understanding of the situation. Was that kind of clear?
Yes, yeah, that does make sense, yes.
ATC, okay. Let's go from the Gabe Akers situation and go to the Gonzo. How do you anticipate the Christian Gonzalez contract, lingering kind of thing out there? How do you feel that's going to get resolved, and what does that look like for training camp?
I think it's really contingent on Devin Witherspoon with Seattle. Another player similar to Gonzalez. When his deal is done, then I think the Patriots and Gonzalez in particular will say, okay, now we have a comp that we're going to work off. You can't really work off of Trent McDuffie. He's a slot corner. Christian plays a different position. I would imagine that Gonzalez wants to be closer to 33 to 35. We've heard mentioned upper 30s, even 40. And Albert, again, does a great job. And he wondered aloud, didn't report it, wondered, but would he want to reset the market and be closer in cost to some of the non-corners out there? And I think that's an interesting counter on the part of a player like Gonzalez. We heard a tackle recently, Paris, played for the Cardinals, might be Paris Johnson, I might have the wrong name. He made the point, he's like, look, I play left tackle, I have to stop guys who are making $40 million. Why aren't I not making $40 million? Jackson Smith and Jigba signed for $42 million as a wide receiver. Christian Gonzalez had a good Super Bowl, very good postseason in general. That could be his counter. But I think Witherspoon is the domino that they're waiting to see fall. And I think that it does make sense for the Patriots to say, okay, you want to do that? We can do that. We'll wait for that to happen. But generally, Teddy, don't you see these things take longer rather than shorter once it gets to this point? Closer to the season sometimes.
Absolutely. I anticipate it getting done, but, week and a half before the season starts, maybe, just at the end of training camp. Yeah.
Same.
So, A.J. Brown, obviously a big story here in the offseason, Tom. How healthy is he, to your knowledge, and like how hard are they going to ride him? Because he does have that knee issue, right, in camp. How much do he and Drake need to work together to get that chemistry up?
That's a great question. It's probably going to be the number one thing that we're all going to try and watch. Engaged going through. We watched with Stephon Diggs last year. He was coming off an ACL, and he participated pretty strenuously for a guy with that situation, and he was out there a lot. I don't imagine that A.J. Brown is going to be limited in any way. They might manage him because he's a player who's getting closer to 30 at this juncture, but they need the reps in terms of establishing that kind of chemistry that's necessary and the communication that's necessary, because we've seen it for decades. If you're running the Patriots offense and Josh McDaniels is at the controls, you want to be able to do things post-snap so that that's when the wide receiver is reading the corner, reading leverage, making a decision afterwards. So we used to see it, Teddy. Brady would go with whichever his top receivers were and work with a cornerback. I remember one of the coolest things I would watch would be Brady working with Gronkowski against Revis and just standing on a field like, watch it, three of the best players that ever played mm-hmm. their positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they would just work for 10, 15 minutes during a practice so that they're getting on the same page. And as Brady once said about Gronkowski, I can watch the way he's running down the field from 25 yards away, and just by the tilt of his shoulders, I know which way he's going to go.
Yeah.
So those things have to be established.
So, you know, it's interesting, too, you know, with A.J. Brown and everything. Is Kayshon Boutte going to be on this team? What do you think is going to happen?
There's not a huge market around the NFL for Kayshon Boutte right now. Otherwise, I think he might have been dealt. And to me, if I were the Patriots, I would look at that situation and say, we're not going to give him away. He's a productive player. He's a good yards per catch guy. He catches the ball in traffic. He doesn't have drops generally. He would be insurance for A.J. Brown. He would be insurance inside. I don't think the Patriots would be in a massive rush to move on from him. But that is, Rich, one of the things that I look at that's going to be really interesting to see develop. You have A.J. Brown. You have Dobbs. You have Boutte. You have Kyle Williams. You have Mack Hollins. You have Efton Chisholm. You have Pop Douglas. That's seven players, all of whom, again, Efton Chisholm's not going to be screaming if they throw the ball to A.J. Brown, but who could use the football and do some work with it. So divvying up those reps, especially for Dobbs, I think, is going to be interesting to see how frequently he gets the ball, because he was signed as a player that prior to A.J. Brown getting here, you said, okay, well, that's where Diggs' targets are going to go. A.J. Brown's 150, 160 target a year guy, which I think he could be. How many is Dobbs getting? So that's an interesting thing I want to see unfold as well.
Hey, Tom, what do you think about the changes made on offensive line? It's subtle. I mean, you're running Vera Tucker to play guard, and you moved Jared Wilson from guard to center. How do you think that offensive line, if they all stay healthy and as it's currently constructed, how do you think that has been assembled? Do you like the changes they made in the on that line? Yeah.
I think they can kick the hell out of people if Elijah Vera Tucker stays healthy. You know, you had an issue last year with Will Campbell and Jared Wilson really playing pretty well as rookies next to each other. But then as the season wore along and when defenses got more difficult, and the Patriots are going to see a hell of a lot more top 10 defenses this year than they did last year, I think those two guys next to each other were exploited because of their youth and with Campbell's injury that he played with during the playoffs. Now you're going to stick a guy in between them in Vera Tucker, who's got experience, who's an unbelievably talented player. He's just been snake bit by injury. If they can get Wilson in a more natural position, he should be better than Bradbury, who was good at center last year. I think that Campbell is going to be, I think he's a starter level player at the very least, and I think he could be a very good starter at left tackle. So you have that side is locked down. Mike Mwenu should be fine. And I think that from what I've seen, and it'll be fun to watch this too, Caleb Lomu backing up Morgan Moses, the first round pick. Lomu, I like the way he moved. I thought he certainly fits the suit.
Boy, so he looks good. I mean, he looks the part, doesn't he? I mean, he's just huge.
He does. He's huge.
Yeah.
So, Tommy, I want to quickly jump back to something Ted was talking about. Like, how much influence does Mike Vrabel have on the roster? Like, this whole Christian Gonzalez situation, do you think that he's got any kind of say or influence on the crafts as to whether or not they end up giving him that extension or they look elsewhere?
It's funny you said crafts. I was talking to Phil Perry earlier today just about this. And, you know, he mentioned how I think a lot of people are under the perception that it's the crafts. I cannot imagine that Jonathan or Robert are sitting across the table from the agent or on the phone with them talking about what the numbers are. That's something that you've asked, you know, Ryan Cowden and Elliot Wolf to take care of, and they have a budget to work with. And I would imagine Mike's just kind of walking in and saying, what's the status? That should be the way it goes. There's a budget there. everyone should know that this player is going to make between 32 and 36 million. How you divvy it up and how you give them the, you know, the bonus, how much guaranteed money is up to them. I think in Vrabel's, at least the way that he has portrayed it, in the way that he has spoken to us, is that's them, that's their job, just keep me posted on it. So I just don't think that – I think the pecking order works, Rich, mm-hmm. in other words. Instead of Mike just, you know, knock, 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 can we just get him in camp? I don't care what it costs. I just don't think that would happen.
Did you read anything into those comments that Robert Kraft said about Mike Vrabel at the Fanatics Fest when he went, I think it was like, sweetheart, I know he'll be our coach for years to come. Like, he was, like, really emphatic on letting you know that they are all in on Mike Vrabel. Did you buy that? Did you get the same sense?
Yes, I do. I buy it. I do buy it. I think he's done the job long enough. Kraft, I mean, has been an owner long enough. He's seen every manner and stripe of human failing and misstep. And generally speaking, in my experience with him, he's got a pretty good heart. And if you look him in the eye and say, I effed up, I'm sorry, I need to work on some things, I'm going to be a better person, he's going to say, look, okay, well, I wish that hadn't happened. I wish you well. Please go do the job well. I truly believe that would be the case. Ted?
Agreed. 100%. Yep.
It doesn't seem to be affecting Vrabel. Like, we heard this, the speech that he made to some of the rookies. Like, he seems like the same Mike Vrabel, well, right?
But when you get the owner to back you like that, and you get the support he got from Robert Kraft, I mean, I think it allows him to be freed up and get back to, you know, being the guy he was before all that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you're – unfortunately, we all wear masks wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
Home masks, there's your work mask, there's your coach mask, there's your talking to the fellow coach's mask. And I think Mike is adept. Again, I'm going to defer to Ted because I love having the opportunity to talk to Ted about somebody that he knows more intimately than I do. But I think Mike isn't artificial or inauthentic, but I do think that he is able to – code switch, if you will, pretty quickly. And if he's talking to a bunch of 22-year-olds who just got drafted, he's not going to be sitting there going, oh, no, what do they think of me?
Right.
He's got a job to do.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, happy football season, man. This is nice.
I know.
Finally, we can stop speculating about, well, I guess we still have the Diana Rossini thing that has not yet been settled. But outside of that, everything else seems to be kind of falling into place. The Gonzalez thing is going to be wild, wild to see what they end up doing with that, whether he plays, whether he doesn't play. I mean, listen, the drama never stops. The NFL is honestly 12 months out of the year, but this is where it gets good, Tommy Curran. This is where it gets good.
And you know what? By the time I talk to you next week, they're going to go at it for the next 5 days, but it's kind of a ramp-up period. Wednesday, I think, is off, and then Thursday should be kind of a legitimate practice. So by the time I talk to you next Thursday afternoon, should have some little paint swapping down low, maybe some goal line activity I can tell you about.
Hell yeah, Tommy. All right, Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boss, thanks for coming out with us.
Thanks, appreciate
it. All right, take care, guys.
We'll be right back. Oh, the biscuit! It is 93.7 WEEI, Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, Ted Johnson. You can call us at 617-779-7937. As much as I'll clown on Limp Bizkit, I will never clown on that song. That is one of the – it's really a perfect song.
A perfect song?
In a way that it's like it accomplishes exactly what it needs to. It was written basically to form mosh pits, to make people push each other, and – it's kind of had a resurgence, and so has Limp Bizkit, believe it or not, after being gone and not being able to sell any tickets. All of a sudden, they're headlining festivals and things, and a lot of it's because that song's gone viral. Like, every time they play that, the place just explodes, and it's because it has a great buildup. It's that stupid, you know, break your fucking face tonight. Give me something to break. Yeah, and the lyrics are so dumb, and everything's dumb, but it works. And that's one of the few songs, and I think that their lyrics are so stupid and whatever, but that song, for some reason, just works. You know, just the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while. By the way, real quick, Alec on line one, if he's still there, let me just talk to him. Just to indulge me here. Alec, what's happening, man? How are you doing?
We got to pull him up here.
Oh, we got to pull him up.
Okay.
There
we go.
Hey. Alec, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Alec.
I'm still here. I went to go see Social Distortion on Monday night, and I got comments for you about the mosh pit.
How was it?
I love the concert. I love the music. It's totally like 50s greaser guitar surf rock stuff. So me and my friend were in the last row, and we were spread out on like 10 seats each and just loving it. And but they only moshed for three songs. They moshed for Story of My Life, Ball and Chain, and Fire, the Johnny Cash cover song.
Yes,
and everything else, like, people were like lost.
Yeah, Alec, I have to tell you, Social Distortion has quickly become one of my, I don't want to say one of my favorite bands, but I love that band. I do. And it's like,
I love them too.
Yeah, in the last several years, but I went and saw them when they came last time to MGM, and when they were doing the tour with Bad Religion, and Social Distortion came out, and all of a sudden this mosh pit starts. Now, you have to understand, this is a band that like kind of had their heyday in the 90s and the early 2000s, so the mosh pit starts, and it was over in like 45 seconds, because it was all a bunch of dudes.
They're all in their 60s.
Yeah, and they're all like, oh, boy, and everyone kind of looks at each other with like a, we aren't as young as we used to be. It was hysterical, and it was like everyone wanted to mosh, but it just kind of was like, you know, maybe we'll just sit and listen to the music. So, yeah.
100%.
Yeah, but they're a great band. You have good taste, Alec. Very, very, very good taste. Social Distortion.
Hey, I got a thought for you on Tom Brady, though. I got a thought for you on Tom Brady.
Okay, real quick. You got 10 seconds.
He will unite the country because he will bring Pizza Hut people together with avocado people.
Well, there
yes,
you go.
Of course, of course. Oh, yes. By the way, the Tommy Kern interview brought to you by Milligan & Higgins, OUI and Criminal Defense Attorneys. Go to MilliganandHiggins.com for a free consultation. And I'm so glad you are listening to our drive home. As brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Well, Ken,
yeah.
My goodbye to you is sponsored by Cars for Kids.
Thank
the easiest
you.
Way to get rid of your old car. Donate today, and your car can be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's new, Cars with K.
New streak tomorrow for the Red Sox, plus veterans report to camp, plus Arcand has four big hours tonight.
Love it.
That's a lot of
love
action.
Love the Christian Arcand show. Yep, that's right. Tomorrow's... Was going to be greatness before anyone else. I will give us credit.
Breaking Chad from bad to Chad. Here we go.
What was it? Chad GPT? Is Chad that what GPT, someone called? Yeah.
Chad News Bears.
I don't mind that one. Don't mind that one at all. All right, everybody. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Congrats to Chad Tracy. Blue Sox Hall of Fame. No Red Sox tonight. Christian Arcand is going to be in your face for 4 hours. Enjoy it. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye. Was going to be greatness before anyone else. I will give us credit.
Breaking Chad from bad to Chad. Here we go.
What was it? Chad GPT? Is Chad that what GPT, someone called? Yeah.
Chad News Bears.
I don't mind that one. Don't mind that one at all. All right, everybody. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Congrats to Chad Tracy. Blue Sox Hall of Fame. No Red Sox tonight. Christian Arcand is going to be in your face for 4 hours. Enjoy it. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.